same reflection.
So, let's sit this time.
Is it interesting?
I'm reading all kind of articles. Mm-hmm. One on Prince William's surgery.
On what?
Prince William's.
Oh, I see. That's interesting.
Today's head title was stupid thing. It says 42 minutes. That's the only time his dad allowed to him or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, really bloody stupid.
Did you have 42 minutes? Look. Pins. That's interesting. Were you in time?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, I was very much so. I was there about 9:05 or something.
Uh-huh. Instead of 9:30. Yeah. And then could you get in or did you have to wait around? Mm.
Had to wait for about 10 minutes.
Get in? Why don't you lie down a bit?
Well, I'm doing much better now.
Yes?
Yeah, but just afterwards.
Did you sleep well?
Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just afterwards you were. Yeah.
I really put everything in it, I think. Yeah. Because I wasn't too nervous.
Did he come at once?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's
me. Yeah, but it comes by bits and bits with me.
Yeah,
all the time. It's always like that, and I hate that because I'm so that's why I'm so slow too. You know, you have people who write it once through. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Impossible. I've never been able to do that. So I write like 10 lines or something.
Yeah.
And then poof. Have to wait and see how I'm going to do further. Because I have to structure while I'm writing, so I'm structuring while I'm writing, and I can't
You don't structure. I think that's a good idea to structure before the plan, make a plan before you start.
Yeah.
But I somehow, I don't do it, and I know one should, it's better. No.
Well, I plan it a little bit, but even if I plan, I still can't write it.
Yeah. And you know what? Until I get started, it takes longer for me. And then I usually can get going. Yeah. But until I keep going, or sometimes suddenly after, I say, that's it. And then after one page or half, God, I don't know anything anymore.
Yes, that's it.
You know what I mean? And then I have to start something else.
Yeah.
Does that happen to you?
Yeah. My third question today.
Yeah.
I didn't know which question to take.
Yes.
One or the other. Mm-hmm. Which one should I take? So I said, at least I sat there for 10 minutes. Which one should I take?
Which
is the most stupid thing.
Well, no, it's just.
And then I started one.
Yes.
And I said no. I won't be able to do this. Mm. And started another one and said, no, I won't be able to do this, and got back to the other one and did the other one.
So much profit, and I just this way, I just wouldn't have it, you know, it's just impossible, it's impossible. And I hummed and hawed which way, and hummed and hawed which way. In the end, it must have been the right one, because I was the best of all. And I, you know, until 5 minutes before everything finished, I just couldn't make up my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was just lucky to have taken the right decision for once.
Uh-huh.
But as it did, as you say, you know, until 5 minutes before it all had to be in, I just couldn't make up my mind. I find this very agonizing, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Or then I wouldn't know how to continue. Tomorrow, it's easier, isn't it? Didn't you say so?
Yes.
Much.
Not much. Those two here now, this week,
yes,
are the hardest ones. Next week is...
Beautiful.
Well, I had much... It was much easier for me to study the ones I have next week than these ones.
Just two next week. Also, I've asked you, I'm sure, many times, but...
Also, the one...
Also Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
So that will come easier to you, will it?
Yeah. This one was hard, because this one, to me, I think, was the hardest, because it was very theoretical, and you had to know theories by heart, And tomorrow it's hard, because it's an economics one, and I have never had economics before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it's, the second part is easier, because it's applying economics to telecommunications and cable television.
Uh-huh.
And all
that's
that.
More
and
practical.
Much more practical,
uh-huh.
So that's all right.
Yes.
And then... Next week is it's easier subject.
Uh-huh.
So.
Well, it's a good thing there are only four, aren't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, afterwards, is your thesis going to be difficult?
No.
Not
really. You know, it's the thing you want to, you choose, and so you like doing it.
Yeah, okay.
So
you know where you start.
Yes, I have already had interviews and everything.
Uh-huh.
Just need to start, well, I need some more interviews and then start structuring it, finding more readings, and then writing. Should I bring the
pop? No. It always leads somehow.
Okay.
Well, you can. Do you want some more tea?
I'll get you.
Do you want some more?
Do you want some more?
Don't you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, come on.
Don't worry.
Just a little tiny bit of sugar.
Yeah.
And why don't you take your cup as well?
No,
no. Well, take you first. Stefan, you are exactly Isabel's age, are you?
Yeah, but 2 months older than me.
Really?
3 months
older. Same year.
I'm eight.
Yeah. Because my friend's daughter, whom I met, she is 1 year and a few days older than you two. Huh? Than, well, Isabel. She's born in first week in August, a year later, 30, No, 64. So, she's a year older, and her son is a year younger. No, 2 years younger.
67.
He is 24.
Yes.
But he's in Australia. They're in Perth. They're Indians. And he worked here. He did his master's here in,
mm-hmm.
I think he, for his basic degree, got that in India.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did a master's degree here in London. And two degrees he did here, one in Edinburgh. He is an orthopedic surgeon. So he does mostly hip replacement.
Mm-hmm.
He's a surgeon. He's in our age. Mostly when I hobbled along with my knee, he said, "Well, you should come to that time." He forgot the knee replacement. How did you take a ticket? How did you have to come? First to Angel, and then...
Oh, you
couldn't take a return one, then. That's a north.
Yeah. No, I took two
tickets.
Yeah.
But that's how you had to do it.
Well, no, I could take a return if I wanted to.
But first to Angel.
I took one to Angel, which is 290.
To Angel.
290.
You see, usually coming out the return. A travel card return.
310.
Yeah. But,
I know, but before 9:30 it doesn't work.
Yes.
So, and then I wonder how much a weekly one was, but it's 2160 a weekly.
Mm.
So it's, I counted it, and for the time I'm staying, it's not worthwhile.
Not worth it. No. And can you take a weekly from Monday to Monday, or?
No, it's from Monday to Sunday.
You can't just take it from any time for
yes.
7 days.
Oh no, yes, you can take
you
it
can.
From, I can take it tomorrow
for a week.
For a week.
Uh-huh, yes. £22.
21.60.
21.
Yeah.
And to come back, how much did that cost?
Again, 2.90.
Again, 2.90.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all expensive. Huh?
It's incredible.
Yeah, £6 just.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's £6. It's what I pay to go to Knocke.
360.
Yeah, 360. No, I pay more.
Wait a minute.
Yes, it's
360. 360, isn't it? Let's say 60 for a pound. Yeah, it's a lot. 360.
That's one way to Knocke.
Yes, one way to Knocke. Yeah,
that's still expensive too, you know, I think. Yeah. Can you imagine you pay 600 francs to go back and forth to
Yeah.
It's quite expensive.
Well, it is. It does cost that 600 return.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, I mean, it's much longer than this journey. It's very expensive and dreadful trains, aren't they? Dirty and uncomfortable. Well, I think we are next in line to get some new ones.
This morning I was sitting on a new one.
Really?
Well, I
never
sat
on a new train in this line.
No, no.
There are some nice ones.
It looked new outside,
uh-huh.
But inside it wasn't.
Yeah. I was staring at a woman, I thought of you. There was an old woman opposite me on the way home, and she had two big, like that, Malbea pearls, two yellow ones. Looking and thinking, oh, I like them, you know. These are not real. They're not bad ones.
They're
I mean,
nice
they should
one.
Last a little while, huh? Because they are crunched up, they're powdery.
Mm-hmm.
They take seashells or pearl, most of them. and make powder of it and then put,
put
several layers on it. So they are not, they should last 10 years.
Yeah.
But they are not real, and she had real ones. Mm-hmm. What did we see? We saw things like that yesterday for about £4. And
yeah, they were not that nice.
And I paid after all 47.
Yeah, but
going almost 50. So there must be a bit of a difference.
Yeah.
But of course, the real thing is the real, it's the real pleasure. When are you going to Christie's?
Tomorrow afternoon, I think.
Tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we're going for lunch.
Yes.
To celebrate our first week.
Yes, where are you going?
I don't know yet.
You don't know yet.
Then
your colleagues from...
Yeah. And then I will go to Christie's in the afternoon, and probably maybe have a drink with some friends before going to the concert, and then I'll come back.
Do you know your way about?
Yes,
it's in
the Barbican.
Well, do you know that you
I
have
know the way.
You know the way here.
I've already been to the Barbican.
So by underground, and you came here.
No.
You lived here.
No, from here, no.
You have to change something.
I know I have to change, but I'll find it, don't worry.
London Bridge.
Yeah, don't worry.
You have to walk a bit. It's not nice.
Do you like the Barbican?
Yes. Well, yes.
You know, I think the acoustic is very bad in that home.
Yeah, but somewhere else I was, it was much worse. The acoustic is wonderful in a festival home.
Yes, it's the most wonderful thing. But
yeah.
So I sat in the Barbican up. At this, around the same level as the Royal Festival, I couldn't hear anything.
No. And yet it's all wood, isn't it, in that great
it's
hall?
Real. Well, you supposedly there have been many criticisms about it.
I know, I've heard it.
But
did you actually?
I didn't hear. I mean, I could hear. It was. I don't know. I mean, it was. You know, it's not that.
Starting tomorrow at 9.
It was
on Channel 4.
Do you mind if I watch the news at 6? But.
You will have to watch them again with Patrick.
I don't. Well, I will probably study at 9.
Uh-huh, okay.
That's why I'm watching.
Because he won't give up his news.
So, what was I saying? No, there was a kind of a veil that kept the voices coming out.
Really? How far up? Well,
I was totally up, all the way
and
up.
And it was there.
And it wasn't. Well, I thought, I'll see tomorrow, but that's what I...
You are up somewhere.
Oh, it was the Ninth of Symphony.
Yes.
The Ninth Symphony of Beethoven.
Yes, but you might have not have heard it.
Well, not as much as I'm used to.
No? You know... Anne-Marie has an abonnement in Brussels. In, I think, we have to turn up. Well, she's on the second balcony, in the centre, but under the top, you know, where the...
One generation on, the crew of the Enterprise,
and she says it's a great show in the parterre.
Prince Derek says William's much better, then takes him home. and generous Windsor Derby with a little help from Leicester. The government has announced that dangerous fighting dogs will not be destroyed, but they and their owners will have to meet strict new regulations. Announcing the Dangerous Dogs Bill, Home Secretary Kenneth Baker said he was making it legally impossible and socially unacceptable to own these dogs in the future. British Vets and animal welfare organisations have welcomed the bill. The RSPCA described it as humane and sensible.
Yes.
The bill lays down that from the end of July it will be an offence to breed, sell or exchange American pit bull terriers
and Japanese
bulldogs.
All the dogs.
You must be kept on a lead and be muzzled in public places. From the end of November, it will be illegal to have such a dog unless it's been neutered and the owner has obtained a permit and third-party insurance.
Good.
Anyone who allows any breed of dog to injure someone could face up to 2 years in jail and an unlimited fine.
Lovely.
The government has abandoned the option of the enforced mass destruction of up to 10,000 American pit bull terriers in favour of strict controls on ownership. The Home Secretary described the legislation as a tough but balanced response to the problem of dangerous dogs. Owners who decide to have their dogs put down will get around £50 compensation. Mr. Baker believes many people will take this option, and he rejects suggestions that the bill is not tough enough.
What the law does, when it's on the statute book, will in fact bring about the end of these vicious fighting dogs in Britain. And that's going to be, I think, very widely welcomed, not only by the victims, but also by the various dog interests.
Both Labour and the Liberal Democrats have renewed calls for a dog registration scheme to cover all breeds.
Yes.
But not all
the
vicious, some do great. This kind of
dogs, many accuse the government of overreacting. And some owners may try to evade the law by crossbreeding.
It's going to be hard for anybody to prove what breed of dog it is once the pups are born. I mean, so a lot of people see this one and they say, well, that doesn't look like an American pit bull terrier. Full pedigree, I've got the papers for it. And I mean, I could have said, well, it's a Labrador cross, but I'm prepared to stand up for my dog.
11-year-old Kelly Lynch from Dundee died after being attacked by two Rottweilers. Her mother says all dogs should be muzzled.
That's what it is.
Terriers, pit bull terriers only. And it's not only pit bull terriers who are attacking people, it's all sorts of dogs.
The legislation has been broadly welcomed by vets and animal welfare groups.
The government has followed the advice given by the British Vet Association. And if people follow the rules, then they'll be able to own these dogs without any problems whatsoever. They won't have to mass destruct the dogs. And maybe in the future, we'll be able to register all dogs, and that will be of enormous benefit to the public, the veterinary profession, and the government.
And he wants owners to opt for plastic basket muzzles like this, rather than more open leather muzzles, which dogs can chew through. The Home Office admits it will take years for pit bull terriers to be phased out of Britain. And during that time, there will still be the risk
of further attacks
where owners flout the law.
Two leading bankers met the Chancellor this afternoon to discuss claims that banks are making unfair profits from small businesses. One of them, the chairman of the National Westminster, has said in the past few minutes that he welcomes the inquiry and has nothing to hide. The chairman of all the leading banks are being summoned to the Treasury after suggestions that they're not passing on interest rate cuts to some of their customers.
The chairman of the NatWest arrived at the Treasury this afternoon, closely followed by the chairman of the TSB. The big banks collectively stand charged with failing to pass on lower interest rates to their small business customers. But Lord Alexander emerged defiant from his meeting with the Chancellor.
I told him we cooperate in every way with discovering anything anyone wanted to know. We have basically a good record, we have nothing to hide, and we wish it to come out properly into the open.
But the traders who sparked off the row are already criticising the way their complaints are being handled. They say the talks at the Treasury aren't enough. They want the matter referred immediately to the Monopolies and Mergers Commission.
We feel that these boundary assurances behind closed doors will be a sop. The doors will remain closed. It will be a whitewash job on the banks. And at the end of the day, we will be no better off.
For years, the government has resolutely followed a policy of non-intervention in business. And today's attempts by the Chancellor to sort out industry's complaints against their banks appears to some Conservatives an unwelcome shift in policy.
I don't think that this is something where government intervention is going to make the situation better. I mean, one of the problems, isn't it, that we have got into has been caused by government intervention in the past.
But the small companies minister at a trade fair in the Isle of Wight today made no apology for the government stepping in.
I think the message is quite clear to the banks anyway. Your customers aren't happy and you must sort your act out or else the government may feel it has to do something about it.
For the past decade, the non-political Office of Fair Trading has examined allegations of unfair practice and, if necessary, passed matters on to the Monopolies Commission. But
yes,
the IFT says the government has so far not asked for any help in the Chancellor's investigation to the High Street Bank.
The Labour leader, Neil Kinnock, has accused the Chancellor, Norman Lamont, of oozing smug contempt over the effect of the government's economic policies. Mr Kinnock denounced the government's record during a speech to trade unionists in Bournemouth.
Neil Kinnock's been given much credit for transforming Labour's fortunes, but he's yet to succeed in tackling one crucial problem. Opinion polls suggest that he's failed to convince voters that Labour, not the Tories, are more likely to sort out the economy. His speech to the GMB was part of the ongoing effort to change that, and the Chancellor was today's target.
People here, Norman Lamont oozing smug contempt for the people whose lives he's ruining with his policies. They are saying to him, and they're saying to John Major and the rest of the government, if you think that rising unemployment and recession is a price worth paying, you pay it. We've paid enough.
Rising unemployment, especially in Tory seats in the south of England, is seen by Labour as a more potent electoral factor than in the early 80s. John Major, whose day included a meeting with the Prime Minister of Luxembourg, is being joined by Cabinet colleagues in a concerted attack on Labour's employment policies.
It's Labour that would introduce a job destruction, which would destroy up to 2 million jobs in this country, through introducing a national minimum wage, through embracing the European Social Action Programme, and through introducing their strikers' charter, which would strike at the very heart of our economic prosperity.
The quality of Labour's jobs campaign was also attacked by the Liberal Democrats.
I am not prepared to deal with this on a grubby will of the votes basis. That's what Labour's doing. We believe that the real problems being encountered by families and individuals who are now suffering from this unemployment must be articulated.
The effects of the recession will be debated by MPs later this evening. And while ministers believe that Labour's credibility problem on economic policy won't be overcome in time for the election, Labour says the government's own record will speak for itself.
President Gorbachev has warned that the prospects for world peace will be threatened if his efforts to transform Soviet society fail, and he's urged the West to support him. His speech in Oslo to accept the Nobel Peace Prize made no mention of his request to address next month's economic summit in London. But it's been revealed today that President Bush told John Major he had no objection to Mr. Gorbachev's presence there.
Mr. Gorbachev came to Oslo to accept a peace prize which many now feel he doesn't deserve. What should have been the crowning recognition of his career as international peacemaker, overshadowed by his recent use of force against independence movements in his own country. But in a speech dedicated to maintaining his reformist world image, the Soviet leader stressed that tough measures have been used only to uphold the law, and that he still remains committed to democratic reform.
Firm central authority is necessary to ensure that all observe the law. But being resolute doesn't mean a return to repression, diktat, or the suppression of rights and freedom.
And in repeating his pleas for Western cooperation to help the Soviet economy, Mr. Gorbachev introduced a veiled threat, suggesting that if the West didn't support him, it too would suffer.
If perestroika fails, the prospect of entering a peaceful period in history will vanish, at least for the foreseeable future. Any changes in ties between Moscow and Washington could have grave consequences for the entire global process.
The continuing intimidation of Baltic separatist movements has raised Western doubts about the wisdom of propping up the Gorbachev administration. US Vice President Dan Quayle said yesterday that massive financial aid is a non-starter. But Mr. Gorbachev's international record remains impressive. His acceptance of German unification and his refusal to create crush the drive for independence in Eastern Europe won him the admiration of the world, while his decision to withdraw from Afghanistan brought a new realism to Soviet foreign policy that has allowed the resolution of
conflicts
throughout the globe. Successive American presidents have been happy to sign arms reduction accords with Mr. Gorbachev, making considerable savings in military expenditure. But the question now is whether these achievements are enough to convince Western leaders that they should become the paymasters for a Soviet administration which is teetering on the brink of economic collapse. Martin Sixsmith, BBC News, Moscow.
President Gorbachev was admitted today that renewed Soviet military activity in the Baltic Republic of Lithuania had not been ordered by Moscow. He said there had been misunderstandings on both sides, but there's still intense concern in Lithuania that another military crackdown could take place. And the Lithuanian president, Vytautas Landsbergis, has repeated that the West should attach conditions to any aid it gives Moscow.
The Lithuanian parliament is fortified with sandbags and cement blocks, guarded by the Republic's own defense force. The Lithuanians do not recognize the central authority of the Kremlin, whose enforcers Mr. Gorbachev has stressed, and fear further repression of their independence could be imminent. Last night, several hundred people gathered outside the parliament building again. They spent a peaceful night. The separatist leadership has asked for the vigils to be maintained. The fear here is that the Soviet troops who flexed their muscles on Monday night may seize the opportunity of Mr. Gorbachev's absence for a further, perhaps violent show of force. Lithuanian leadership believes any Western aid for the Kremlin will encourage authoritarian rule from the centre unless it is subject to strict conditions.
The main conditions must be democratization as well as economic.
In a way, I would like to go to Finland with you. Does it tempt you?
All of Scandinavia.
Oh, me too. I think Finland even knows. But you haven't been anywhere.
No.
Despite the American criticism of Soviet troop movements here, Lithuanians believe the West is choosing to ignore their plight in the face of Soviet aggression. The theory here is that if Western leaders fear the hardliners have gained the upper hand, they'll be more likely to grant financial aid to President Gorbachev to prop up his leadership. Harold Walker, BBC News, Vilnius.
A defence lawyer at the trial in Holland of three people accused of killing two Australian tourists last year has claimed that three other men may have carried out the murder. Two of those he named are being held on terrorism charges in Belfast. The third was killed by Northern Ireland security forces last year. The three people in court were acquitted of the killings at an earlier hearing.
At Setaghambos Court, the judges were told that those on trial did not carry out the killings. Instead, a known IRA active service unit may have been responsible. One of the defence lawyers said three men were possibly involved, naming them as Patrick Fox, Dermot Quinn and Desmond Grew. The judges heard that the police knew the three had been in Holland and that Patrick Fox had been deported last August for allegedly trying to collect forged British and American passports in Rotterdam. But in reply, the public prosecutor denied there was any link with the present case. One of those named today, Desmond Grew, was killed in an SAS ambush last October. He was a known IRA gunman. The other two are currently detained in Northern Ireland on terrorism charges. The killing of the two Australian lawyers in Roermond last year has caused continuing problems for the Dutch authorities. No one saw the four people already charged actually carrying out the crime, and the possibility that others committed the murders has been raised frequently during the past 12 months. This latest suggestion will be investigated fully only if more evidence can be placed before the court. A new inquiry into the killings hasn't been ruled out, though, by judges hearing the current case. Jonathan Charles, BBC News, Setaghambos.
In Belfast, a taxi driver and a woman passenger have been injured in a gun attack. It began in the city centre. Then the gunman, who was in a car, followed the taxi to the Shankill Road, where he opened fire again. The driver and the passenger are in hospital, but aren't thought to be seriously injured. An extreme Republican group has said it carried out the attack.
Prince William has been discharged from hospital after his operation for a depressed fracture of the skull. He left Great Ormond Street Hospital with his mother just before lunchtime.
This morning, the Princess of Wales carried out her first public engagement since Prince William's accident on Monday. She visited the new outpatients department of the Deaf Unit at Springfield Hospital in South London. As patron of the British Deaf Association, she was anxious not to let the organisers down, despite having had a worrying few days by her son's hospital bedside. The inevitable question came from the patients, how was the prince? She answered in sign language, saying he was bruised. And outside, she was clearly relieved when she told everyone he'd improved greatly. Afterwards, the Princess of Wales returned to Great Ormond Street Hospital to be with her son again. Prince William has made a steady progress since his operation for a depressed fracture of the skull on Monday night. Doctors have been so pleased with his improvement that they decided he was well enough to be discharged.
The prince, by his
side, left the hospital in a chauffeur-driven Daimler at midday. They were heading home to Kensington Palace, where he'll continue to recover before going back to school.
Victims of the civil war in Mozambique, hundreds of thousands of people are in danger of dying of starvation. And Colombia takes off with a crew of 7 and 2,000 jellyfish. The time now is 6:17.
The headlines tonight: strict new regulations on fighting dogs like pit bull terriers to include neutering and muzzling.
If you have finished interning,
owners could face jail sentences or unlimited fines. Two of the main banks to discuss claims that small businesses are being charged excessive rates of interest. President Gorbachev, at the award of the Nobel Peace Prize, said the success of perestroika with the cooperation of the West could lead to a new world order. Hundreds of thousands of people are facing starvation in Mozambique in southern Africa. Relief workers say the rest of the world has not reacted in time. Mozambique has endured more than a decade of civil war. In one of the worst hit areas, the Zambezia province, fighting between opposing factions has destroyed the area's agriculture.
You know, they started just informing everybody on television.
Derry is a strong area of life.
And then the Gulf War came up, and that was completely forgotten.
The town has been under government control only since January.
And I always had it at the back of my mind. What happened to
it? It has been attacked twice since then. Now there's jubilation among soldiers and civilians alike. All of them caught in a war no one is ever going to win. The engines are left running. It's too risky to do otherwise. These flights, the only means of getting food into the area, will stop if the rebels mount another attack. It'll take 2 hours' walk across contested territory to get some of this grain to an outlying village. Joao Sangaretti, who's just 9, is one of thousands caught in the crossfire. He was shot in April and still hasn't been treated properly. Both sides in this war are guilty of indiscriminate fire. Now sickness and hunger are finishing off what the bullets began.
There are no set piece battles in the Mozambican war. Territory has been fought for district by district, village by village. And in the process, just about half the population has been displaced, pushed to the margins, and for months on end beyond the reach of the relief agencies.
We really have wars just about everywhere.
But it's out in the bush that the latest tragedy is unfolding. It's over an hour's walk from the nearest airstrip to get to Mulawala feeding station. Here, the bedraggled remnants of the families that once farmed this district.
The problem we have in Mozambique is it's a hidden famine. You can walk around a lot of places in Mozambique and think, gosh, what a nice place it is. But it's until you come to these pockets of places where people can actually get to that you realise the scale of the problem.
The journey can take weeks. By that time, many are beyond help. In Zambezia province, government officials say they simply don't know what condition half the population is in. There's only enough food for a third of the 900,000 who need emergency relief, and stocks will last only another month. George Alagaya, BBC News, Zambezia Province, Mozambique.
Algeria is in a state of siege at the end of 11 days of protest by Islamic fundamentalists. The president has sacked the government and also postponed the first contested general election.
He sent tanks and soldiers off the streets of the capital
where
most businesses have remained closed. The army is also out in force in the cities of Oran and Constantine. 6 people were killed in the riots in Algiers yesterday. The protesters were demanding President Shadi's resignation and the setting up of an Islamic state.
The United States has said it no longer objects to talks between Britain and Vietnam on the possible forced repatriation of Vietnamese boat people from Hong Kong. Until now, Washington has opposed any such policy. Now there could be talks on setting up an internationally supervised holding center for the boat people in Vietnam itself.
From the bays along the Vietnam coast, there's been another surge of boat people, fleeing the poverty and hardship of their homeland. 90% head for Hong Kong, which says because they're looking for a better life and not running away from political persecution, they have no right to land. But the Vietnamese have had little success in stopping them leaving, and have been reluctant to accept boat people sent back against their will. In case that annoys the United States and reduces Vietnam's chances of economic aid. The Hong Kong authorities have made one attempt to force people to return. It sent 51 people back under armed escort in 1989, but abandoned further attempts in the face of international disapproval. But now the United States has softened its position and suggested Britain and Vietnam should talk about internationally supervised repatriation. But there's little time to head off a crisis in Hong Kong's special camps. They'll be full within a fortnight if arrivals continue at the current rate of 200 a day. What's being talked about is transporting the 60,000 people back to camps on Vietnamese soil, but outside Vietnamese jurisdiction. They'd be run by international agencies. Hong Kong would be rid of its problem, and the boat people's hopes of a new life would be ended.
The government has been accused of chronic underinvestment in London's tube network in an official report by the Monopolies and Mergers Commission. The report, which was prepared for the Department of Trade and Industry, says complaints by tube users were justified, and it makes over 100 recommendations, including both increasing efficiency and higher fares.
Oh, what?
Hi, Professor.
It's impossible.
The underground system is the biggest and oldest.
Who takes the tube?
It's erratic, overcrowded, poorly maintained and underfunded.
Get some better managers.
£400 million this year. The underground's management says it needs £700 million a year over the next decade.
Why don't they
have the shortfall was due to the government's refusal to allow fares to go up by as much as was needed. But this afternoon, the British Transport Minister said he didn't think big fare increases were justified, and that investment was already at record levels.
Money's coming from taxpayers in Newcastle, Edinburgh, Clark Cardiff, my own constituency in Kettering, in order to improve the system in London. I don't belittle that, I don't deny it. It's needed. There is a limit to the amount of taxpayers' funds that can be invested. Perhaps we haven't reached that yet, but we have a very credible record.
The report lists 100 recommendations for improvements. Work started on many of them after the King's Cross disaster 4 years ago. The government says it wants to see a modern, uncongested and reliable system. The report says that's a long way off.
The American space shuttle Columbia lifted off from Cape Canaveral after 2 weeks of delays caused by technical problems. There are dozens of rats and thousands of jellyfish on board, and the aim is to study how they and the astronauts react to weightlessness. The American Space Agency is struggling to save its next big project, a manned space station, from spending cuts.
3, 2, 1, ignition and liftoff of Columbia on the first dedicated medical research flight.
The shuttle Columbia blasted off from Cape Canaveral carrying 7 astronauts, 29 rats, and several thousand jellyfish for a series of experiments.
Space phone.
Having overcome 2 weeks of delays caused by technical failures, the NASA scientists now face the threat of a black hole at the heart of their space program.
What do you think?
This is what the space station should look like if it's ever built. A permanently orbiting laboratory planned in association with Britain, other Europeans, and Japan.
All they can.
The next great leap in space.
But
now a key congressional committee has voted to cancel the project, saying they have better things to do with $30,000 million.
We had a certain amount of money available to us in our subcommittee, but we had higher priorities in terms of the homeless, the environment.
Oh, hello, hey.
And this just didn't measure up.
Battle has been joined with the Bush administration, desperately lobbying to keep the space station program alive.
It's difficult to discern any satisfactorily defensible logic in a vote to kill space station freedom at this point. The arguments for cancellation simply do not withstand inspection.
The stakes have rarely been higher because the space station would provide a role for the often troubled shuttle. Cancelling would leave shuttle, NASA, and the whole space program in tatters. But now the Cold War has faded, it's not easy to persuade Congress to throw money at space, even unmanned missions like the recent exploration of Venus, while a kinder, gentler America has so many demands back on planet Earth.
Yes,
Gavin Etzler, BBC News.
Why don't they do clear up here first?
The English horse Generous has won the Derby. He proved to be one of the most impressive winners of recent years. Alan Munro, who rode Generous, spent last night studying videos of Lester Piggott's 9 Derby victories. This time, Piggott, in his return to the race, could only finish 7th. Jenner was priced at 9-1, with Marju 2nd at 14-1, and Star of Gdansk 3rd, also at 14-1.
For the majority, trying to pick the winner in what had been billed as the most open Derby for years was to prove, ultimately, a futile exercise. Newspaper tipsters, even the bookies, gave more than half the field a realistic chance. For the mass of punters on Epsom's famous downs, the traditional Derby Day Fair was as good a place as any to go in search of advice, even from as dubious a source as Gypsy Emily Lee.
I think it's really, really exciting. But I'm going to have my money on Corrupt.
But no fortune was to be earned from the fortune teller, and sentiment represented by Lester Piggott bidding to crown his extraordinary comeback with a 10th Derby triumph on Hockessy was to prove an equally poor investment. 2 furlongs from home, Generous struck the front and proceeded to render all the speculation redundant. Peter Bromley describes his exhilarating sprint for the line.
2 furlongs out and Generous has gone clear with Alan Munro. Hector Protector is chasing him. Marjo in third place, then Hockessy and Steve in the next. But if Generous are making the Derby a procession, Alan Munro, his whip flying is falling clear. And it's Generous who's going to win it from Marjo sticking into second place. A great race for third. And it's Generous wins the Derby.
The jockey Alan Munro, the youngest in the race and just out of his apprenticeship, Derby triumph at only the second attempt.